Oh, it takes a long time and infinite patience to make them talk. One day I'll make a woman and it'll be easier. Justin Souther.
Yes, I'm Justin Souther.
Yeah, and I'm Ken Hanke. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And together we are, what are we?
I don't know. Elitist Bastards.
Elitist Bastards. That was it. Yeah, it was, yeah. I knew we were something. It was, wasn't exactly clear what.
Right. Well, that's what we are.
That's what we are. And we've been to the movies, as per usual. And we are coming to you from the lovely Cinema Lounge at the exotic Carolina Asheville, which is located on...
even more exotic Hendersonville Road.
That is as exotic as it comes.
Yes.
Yes, you did. You saw the Switch, yes. Uh-huh.
Which we talked about a bit last week.
Something tells me that our visions of a girl and her turkey baster were far more entertaining than this movie.
Yes. Well, you see a turkey baster at one point, but that's about it. You never see it used. And it's not even...
Considering who the girl is, I'm good with this.
Right. Well, it's not even the actual baster. It's just a substitute example baster.
I was kind of hoping that, this was like the day before Thanksgiving.
Right. Well, the movie starts off fine because it's sort of cynical and a little snarky, and Jason Bateman is surprisingly good in that sort of role. We usually see him as the nice guy sort of thing.
More or less nice guy sort of thing, yes.
And it's fine for a little while, but as the film goes on and on, it gets more and more schmaltzy and heartfelt and downright boring, which I don't know, it's painless, but
there's one aspect of the plot here that I'm dying to find out because I don't really understand it. What exactly happens to her original sperm?
He gets really drunk, he goes to use the bathroom, except he gets directed to another bathroom
where the sperm is residing.
On a hot plate of some sort, I'm not sure what it is. I guess to keep it fresh. You don't want cold sperm shooting up in your kin, do you?
I was not going there.
Well,
no, and I tried so hard not to go there.
No, that was an honest question of mine. It's like, do you microwave this beforehand? Is that how this
works?
Are
we sure that won't kill? I don't know anything about this. I mean, you know.
It seems like it would get him warmed up a little bit.
Okay. You know? Get the boys moving. Okay.
So he's drunk and he accidentally spills them down the sink.
Why does he even have it open?
Because he's drunk. He's messing with it. And
he's movie drunk. He's plot device drunk. Yes. Okay.
He's so drunk that he forgets that this ever happened and that he's replaced.
That's also movie drunk for the most part.
Right.
Yeah. And so he decides that he'll substitute.
Right. With some aid from Diane Sawyer on the cover of a magazine. So.
Moving right along.
Mm-hmm. What did you watch, Ken? Piranha 3D, do you want to talk about? All three dimensions.
Piranha 3D was, for me, an amazingly disappointing experience. And really, I couldn't think of anything that should have gone together better than two gimmicks: flesh-eating fish and 3D.
You're saying piranha because piranhas are gimmicky?
Yes. Especially prehistoric piranhas that come out of a fissure in the bottom of a lake and eat Richard Dreyfuss in the pre-credit sequence. Now, I understand why something might want to eat Richard Dreyfuss, but nonetheless, part of the problem is there's this real clunky development, like a movie about piranha needs a plot.
Right.
And the development is mostly an excuse, which continues more or less throughout the film, for the various ways that you can show artificially augmented breasts in 3D.
As opposed to naturally augmented? How's that work?
Yes, I don't know, but these are definitely
an act of God. They've been augmented.
These are not an act of God. These things don't move. But in 3D, they could put your eye out. It just gets kind of old after a while. And the carnage is, there's a lot of blood and gore, but it's kind of like so.
Right.
I mean, I ultimately, what I really was more than anything else was bored.
Was it one of these attempts at making a cult movie?
Yes.
That usually they don't work because
they're trying? Yes, because it's trying too hard to be a cult movie. And I should have been skeptical whenever I saw that it was getting really high marks on Rotten Tomatoes, a lot of which were coming from people who thought that the director's film of The Hills Have Eyes was really good. So that should tell you something right there. But apparently they have already signed for the sequel.
Did it make that much money?
No. That's what I don't understand, but they have already signed for the sequel, which I guess is Piranha 4D.
2-3D.
Maybe 3D Cup would be more.
Right. And I watched Lottery Ticket starring.
Which, would that have benefited from Piranha?
Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I think Piranha eating Jennifer Aniston would be...
Well, this is a different movie.
This is different. I know, but I'm just had an inspiration.
Well, the cast in Lottery Ticket, I think it's probably its strength. Everybody's pretty likable. There's never anybody in this movie that got on my nerves. And so it's nobody's all that outstanding either, I would say. So it's a perfectly fine movie. It's
it looked like they had designed specific little things for Ice Cube and Mike Epps to do, but
Mike Epps is in the movie for about 5 minutes. Ice Cube, maybe 15, maybe. But I guess.
So it's mostly the former little Bow Wow.
Yes.
Who is now merely Bow Wow.
And he's good enough.
Okay.
I had no issues with the movie. It's much too predictable. That's the biggest issue.
Well, movies about people with a lot of money, with a lot of people trying to get the money away from them, are not exactly original. Movies about lottery tickets are not original.
There's a lot of movies that aren't original.
But they're better than this.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's necessarily really a consideration in this day and age.
Well, there's not much in this day and age that appears to be original, so you may have a point there.
So, I think we're stuck with it.
Yeah.
For now. Unless you want groundbreaking films like Avatar all the time.
Leave the room. Okay. Now, you might do that, and then I won't have anybody to talk to. And I'd have to talk to the producer, and that would be awful.
You talk to yourself. Not opening last weekend, but opening this weekend.
Opening this coming weekend, yes. Get Low.
Do the magic of press screeners. You've seen it.
Well, yes, I have seen it early, mm-hmm. so that I can...
Speaking of Get Low, I don't know if we've...
Yes.
I think you muttered it a second ago, but I interrupted you.
In any case, it's... Get Low is a perfectly fine film that's made into something more than perfectly fine because of Robert Duvall, Sissy Spacek, and Bill Murray, all of whom are the real reason to see the film. The film is fine. It's based on a real event that happened in the late 30s in Tennessee about a hermit who threw his own funeral while he was still alive so that he could hear what people have to say about him. That's about as much of the actual fact as is in the film, because most of it is entirely made up, trying to get the to figure out why and how all this happened, and also to fill in a character for him, because apparently very little is known about the real man.
Okay.
So you, of course, that also leaves you free to invent whatever you want, and they've invented a kind of ersatz Faulkner Southern okay. Gothic tale to go with it, which is fine, but I mean, what it really is, what makes the film work, what holds the film together, and what actually probably propels the film into a crowd-pleaser, must-see type picture, if you want to put it in those
right.
terms, are the three lead performances.
So if you're a fan of them?
Yes. Yes, if you're a fan of them, and they are all particularly good.
Robert Duvall has been... It seems like he's getting better. I've never been much of a fan of him, but...
Well, you know...
The last few things he's been in...
He's 79. If he's not going to get better now, he's not going to get better.
Right.
At least it's unlikely.
Well, I mean, it rolls a little better, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe he's mellowed a little bit. You know,
possibly.
Something to do with it, so... But no, I mean, it definitely was the best thing I saw last week. In fact, it's worth all five of the other films.
That's not saying very much.
No. Nanny McPhee Returns, which in Great Britain was called Nanny McPhee and the Big Bang. I don't know why we changed the title. People perhaps thought it would, you know, be taken the wrong way or something.
Kismet named it And God Said, Let There Be Nanny McPhee.
Well, there is that too. I suppose the creationists might get kind of worked up about Nanny McPhee and the Big yeah. Bang, but
that would also
which have
a certain it could be a certain adult film maybe.
Yes, but I mean, but the thing is that at least it would have had some sort of character, something that would indicate, oh, maybe there's a reason to see that. Nanny McPhee Returns is like the most god-awful title I can imagine.
It's just lazy.
Yeah, it has no... And it's not like the character is so... It's not like you can say Batman Returns and people are going to show up.
Right.
You know, Nanny McPhee, who they might remember from 4 or 5 years ago, from the first film. And the first film was fine. I liked the first film. And I pretty much liked this film. A little heavy on the bodily functions, humor perhaps, and definitely high on the gas humor. But the characters were nicely drawn. I liked the look of the film, generally speaking. He has a killer cast. I mean, you know, and Maggie Gyllenhaal makes an excellent British person, amazingly enough. But you've got Maggie Gyllenhaal, you've got Emma Thompson, of course, in the lead role. Of course, Emma Thompson also wrote the film.
So you're saying Emma Thompson sat at her desk writing fart jokes?
Kind of.
Okay.
Although there's belching in this, too.
Okay.
In fact, a belching crow is a major plot device,
okay.
if such a thing can be believed. You know, of course, the fact that it is Emma Thompson is probably the reason that we have Maggie Gyllenhaal and Ewan McGregor and Ralph Fiennes. And, you know, these are all people that are going to come do small roles in your film if you're Emma Thompson.
Right.
You know, I honestly think Jessica Alba could not draw this type of talent to appear in her film.
She write better fart jokes.
That's probably true, yeah. So, but no, it's a perfectly good film. I mean, if you have small children... Or if you've rented small children and have to take them somewhere, it's a good bet.
Okay.
And I didn't mind watching it at all. Which is certainly more than I can say about the final film on our list.
Vampires Suck.
Vampires Suck, yes. I understand that you've seen a full minute of this before falling
Maybe
asleep.
About, I don't know. maybe 5 minutes.
And?
It was stupid. I mean...
There you have it. It's yeah. stupid.
I'm not sure what else to...
Well...
What else you would expect from...
I managed to sucker some poor boob, I'm a kind friend, into going to this with me.
Mm-hmm.
We laughed not once. It's basically an incoherent mishmash of the first two Twilight movies.
Right.
And it's not nearly as funny as either one of them was accidentally. It's obvious, infantile, and just all around dreadful. And the fact that it came in number two at the box office this weekend is telling me that Western civilization is definitely in decline.
It tells me a lot of crap came out this weekend.
Well, that too.
It tells me if you put anything decent out this weekend, it would have...
Well, comparatively speaking, Nanny McPhee was decent. Everything I saw was better than this.
Well.
Well, even so.
No, it was good. It was all just like this boring crap. Like nothing.
It was all like okay. Okay was about the level that it got to. So, yes, but that doesn't mean that you have
to. I'm struggling to stay awake just thinking about watching these things.
You know. But why go for the worst one?
At least it has some personality.
What, in being that cosmically god-awful?
Yeah. You're going to remember Vampire Suck much longer than you're going to remember...
Yes, that probably is unfortunately true. It's burned into my memory, you know. I mean, it's...
So, it has that going for it.
Well, it's not enough. Now, what I want to know is that people are always putting internet petitions... to keep Uwe Boll from making more pictures. Why are there no petitions to keep these guys from making more movies?
You know what there needs to be? A petition to
have
Uwe...
Yeah, I know, but they don't allow you to do that anymore.
A petition for Uwe Boll to box the two...
Friedberg and Seltzer.
Yeah. And box both of them.
Simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I like it.
We have a... double feature this Thursday for a Thursday Horror Picture Show.
Which kind of functions as a triple shot of Bela Lugosi, since we've also got, since he's in both of the films, and we have Chapter 2 of the amazing serial The Phantom Creeps, which is pretty amazing, especially compared to the last one. The first chapter of this serial had more happen in it than the entire 12 chapters of the previous serial that we had. And it also was much more prime Lugosi.
Right.
And it has a really cool robot. In fact,
very
perhaps
large head.
The coolest robot ever. Maybe.
Maybe.
Granted, it doesn't do a whole lot.
No.
I'm really sorry because there's a reference in there where his henchman says, "You're not going to bring that thing out again. It might get away like it did last time." I would love to see what happened when it got away, since all it does in the laboratory is knock over a partition and then straighten it back up. Nonetheless, it's
maybe
really,
he's depressed.
It's really a good-looking robot. But anyway, the features themselves are Island of Lost Souls, which is very rarely shown. Mm-hmm. Our copy came from Laserdisc because there is no DVD release of this film. This is a surprisingly grim horror film from 1933, late 32 actually, which really stars Charles Laughton as the sadistic mad scientist, Dr. Moreau. And it's based on the H.G. Wells book, The Island of Dr. Moreau. It was shocking enough in 1933 that the British censor banned it outright, and in fact it was not allowed to be shown in Great Britain until 1958. And even for a pre-code film, it's still pretty grim stuff. I mean, it doesn't flinch about any of the nastiness in it. Lugosi plays one of Lawton's creations, the Sayer of the Law, which that's probably the most famous thing about the film is the whole, what is the law not to spill blood, that is the law, are we not men sequence. But it's a terrific little film. in a nasty sort of way. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Wells was definitely wrong. I mean, you know, horror film fans would go to the mat with old H.G. over whether or not this film was any good, and Wells hated it. In fact, he was delighted when it was banned.
What does he have to say about it now?
Well, I don't know, but I figure that's probably because he hasn't seen any of the movies that were actually called The Island of Dr. Moreau, in which case this one starts to look pretty good to him, I would imagine.
It's not the Marlon Brando one.
The Marlon Brando one, at least, is so screwed up that it's sort of entertaining in its own perverse way. The Burt Lancaster one is just not... Let's not go there. It's just... There are some things it's better not to talk about.
And what's the second film?
The second film is White Zombie, which is a very peculiar film. It's virtually an independent film. And this is at a time when cheaply made films, generally speaking, were terrible.
Okay.
This one is by no means terrible, but it's very strange. It was one of Lugosi's... Well, it was Lugosi's second favorite of his films, despite the fact that he was either paid the princely sum of $500 or $800 right. for making this. The figure varies. And the film would not work at all without him. Plus, there is some evidence that he actually directed chunks of this film.
Okay.
So it really is, and perhaps his most personal film in some respects. The character he plays is, well, he essentially creates zombies. But this is the first zombie movie, and it has to be understood that their zombies are not our zombies. They're not... I don't think anybody's ever used quite the same shtick again. These are live people who have been drugged and are under some sort of mind control from Lugosi's character. They are not actual dead things that have come back to life.
Right.
Though the people in the film tend to take them that way. So, but it's kind of like a bad dream on film, or maybe a fairy tale gone very, very wrong.
Right.
Definitely, if you're
some
a horror
people
fan,
complain.
You know, if you're a horror fan and you've never seen this, you really need to.
Some people complain about movies that have zombies in them, but they're not.
Well, these
the kind of zombies.
These are nothing like that. These don't eat flesh or anything. They just, okay. They lurch, but they don't eat flesh.
So really, zombies that we think of, to make an argument, that those
aren't
zombies.
These are not the original zombies. These, okay. You know, these are the originals. Okay.
And then Tuesday we have Asheville Film Society screening.
Of They Might Be Giants,
yes.
The 1971 rescued from oblivion by audiences cult film starring George C. Scott as a so-called classic paranoid mm-hmm. who thinks he's Sherlock Holmes, and Joanne Woodward as a doctor who is unfortunately named Watson,
okay.
who has been assigned to commit him. And this turns into a quirky romance. It's often funny, it's sometimes touching, it's always charming. Some scenes are actually quite moving. The scene in the telephone company is quite moving, as is the scene where they judge a topiary garden for some people who haven't been outside since 1939 and don't know whether or not their work is any good. Some people dislike the ending because it's ambiguous, but I've yet to find a person who can tell me what a better ending would be. So it's funny because this movie was Universal, didn't know what to do with it when it came out. George C. Scott apparently didn't like it, which is no big deal because George C. Scott didn't like much of anything. It got dumped mostly into drive-ins, the bottom half of Double Bills, and it was pretty much resurrected by audiences. And it's one of those, I mean, this is the true definition of a cult film. which is a film that audiences brought back into being, not something that somebody made because they said, oh, hey, let's make a cult film. You know, it never occurred to anybody involved with this to make a cult film. It just happened. In any case, we do need to remind people that tickets are on sale for the special September 1st at 7:30 screening of Ken Russell's Tommy in a remastered, restored print at the Carolina Asheville, complete with the original Quintophonic soundtrack. If you've never seen it, you need to. If you haven't ever seen it on a large screen, you need to. If you've never seen it with this soundtrack, and unless you saw it in 1975, you haven't. You pretty much need to. So there's a lot of reasons to come see this, aside from the fact that it is a benefit screening for the Asheville Film Society, so you're helping to support the art of film in Asheville if you come to see this movie.
How many times have you seen Tommy?
We won't talk about that. It's in triple digits. We'll leave it at that.
How many times have you seen it since you stopped counting?
Well, how would I know?
I don't know. I'm just ballpark.
I only stop. I don't know. I mean,
is that in triple digits?
Probably not. No, okay. But you know, I mean, I stopped counting after Ken Russell conceded that I had seen it more than he had.
Okay.
You know.
Do you really think you've seen it more than him?
Yes.
Okay.
I pretty much, you know, guarantee it. Now this new print he's seen twice, and I haven't seen it all. So he's up to me on that.
Well, you can maybe catch it.
Yeah, well,
see it as many as 3 or 4 times.
It's possible. We'll see. And coming up this weekend.
What is coming out this weekend?
Well, other than Get Low, which we've already talked about, there is the film I'm going to review, hesitantly, which is The Last Exorcism.
Okay.
Which is the Eli Roth produced. Say, I was making air quotes around produced because I really think it's mostly that his name
why
is.
Why is it The Last Exorcism?
Because they didn't want to call it The Last Train to Clarksville. I don't know.
Okay.
It's supposed to be some guy's last
exorcism. Oh.
It's the last, really last, no fooling exorcism.
Okay.
There'll never be another one.
Is he all,
that's
I'm too
the,
old for the
end
shit.
All be all PG 13 rated exorcism.
Got 2 weeks left.
Yeah.
No more exorcisms. I'm retiring.
It just, you know, there will never be another exorcism after this one. This is it. No more. Unless, of course, this is insanely popular.
Well, what's going to be unfortunate?
And then there'll be really last no exorcism.
What's unfortunate is that his next to last exorcism was much more interesting.
I know, but that didn't make a film, so, you know, what can we say?
But
in any case, this is one of those faux documentary, shaky cam, badly lit, things. However, the trailer looks a little better than most in that regard, and it looks hysterically funny.
Wow.
Which I realize is not the
intent.
Not the intent, but at the same time, it's good enough for me under the circumstances. You, on the other hand, your lot in life is a motion picture called Takers.
Which I was under the impression was never going to come out, because I've been seeing trailers and posters for this movie since, it seemed like the beginning of the year.
Well, what do you know about this? It's also PG-13 rated, unfortunately.
Hayden Christensen's in it.
Oh, that's a bad sign.
I know Chris Brown's in it, and he's only famous these days for crying on TV and beating women, so that should be interesting.
Okay. Someone named T.I. is in it. I believe that must be a rapper.
Yes. Idris Elba, who is in a lot of bad stuff, but is
a good actor.
Yeah.
Matt Dillon.
Who was Matt Dillon.
He's sort of in the was-been category, but yeah.
And which is where Hayden Christian, maybe he can get tips from.
And the guy from, girl from Avatar is in this. And we'll see if
Sigourney
she can.
Sigourney Weaver?
No,
is she in blue makeup?
Yeah, I see if she you know makes an impression when she's not 12 feet tall and blue.
Well, obviously she didn't when she was.
No, well, so. Anyway, that's all that's opening this weekend. Yes. I get
Machete next week, so I really don't care.
Yeah, I know. And I get The American and that Justin Long, Drew Barrymore rom-com. Oh, yeah, that's right, Laugh. That Laugh.
No, I
yeah.
will laugh at that.
Yeah, I'm gonna sit through Machete. Even if I don't sit through it with you, I'm going to watch Machete.
Good.
but I don't get to review it because I said you could have it.
Well, what a sweetheart you are.
I am. And especially after last night when I get an email with a movie that you're already telling me, you know, it's no fair trolling for trailers to show, well, dig up shit
trailer,
you don't want to
the
watch.
IMDb. They're making another Big Mama's House. And they've already called it.
This thing's not even out of production yet, and he's already sent me an email going, I'm not reviewing this.
And I called it. I will watch that Meatballs remake.
Yeah, the Meatballs remake is yours. That appears to be it for us for yet another week.
Yes.
And what do we need to say here?
I'm Justin Salver. You're Ken Henke. We're from the Mountain Express. They've been nice enough to
allow
let us do
us
all
to
this.
Do this, yes.
Steve's over here.
And Steve Schanefeldt, our magnanimous, illustrious, phantasmagorical producer and coherer, has managed to get this all done.